You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, and Arizona. From boosted parlays to in-game odds on every major sport, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign up today to receive a $1,000 risk-free sports bet. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com and start winning today. We're also brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. Check out the new PropSwap.com and use promo code SGP on your first deposit to receive up to $500 in bonus cash. And next, we're also brought to you by Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes. Use promo code SGPNMMA to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. And lastly, we're brought to you by Odds Crowd. Are you the best NBA bettor in the United States? Odds Crowd is challenging you to prove it with their free-to-play fantasy betting contest. There's $3,000 up for grabs in their season-long contest and $200 every week in their weekly contest. Just head over to OddsCrowd.com to sign up now. And while you're at it, make sure to download the SGPN app. It's your home for all of our free picks, podcast news, right there in the palm of your hand. Download it wherever you download your apps.
Hello, Degenerinos, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 81. This one goes out to the year 1981, which is a swell year for a little brother to be born, I must say. I would be your host, Jeff Fox. Hello, and welcome to the podcast. I call myself a host, but I like to consider myself more of a guide, and as each episode, as longtime listeners learn, each episode I take you on a journey through the mind of my associate co-host or associate host. I always call him a co-host, but it's associate host. And you never know what you find on these journeys through his mind. Sometimes you learn about mythical creatures named Ichabod, and sometimes you learn about his days as a frontiersman growing up. But one thing is guaranteed, you're going to find out who's going to win on the Dana White Contender Series every Tuesday when we visit his brain, because this week he did it once again. He went 4-1 on the Contender Series. He even predicted the fight he was going to get wrong. So pretty incredible. People on our SGPN Slack were quite impressed, and he even graced them with his presence while the fights were going on. So he's very lucky that things went well for him in the cage, because you wouldn't want to your first appearance and have go 0-5. So since I promise that this is now the podcast that doesn't need long intros, because we have so much content jammed into the into each episode and into your ear holes, and let's just get right down to it. We will introduce him once again. His introduction is getting long, because he has quite a few nicknames. I even snuck in calling him a flat earther a few episodes back, and I don't even think he noticed it, because he's got so many other nicknames, or he noticed it and he just agreed with it and went, yep, that's true. But regardless, he's the prettiest purple belt on the planet. He's the Dana White Contender Series soothsayer. He's a Danimal. He's Gumby Gumbo, Barney Gumble. He's Daniel Vreeland. Hello.
Hey, I actually, hey. So remember when we used to do, I mean, like, you found a whole bunch of things to dedicate episodes to now that were in the really high numbers. I actually mentally had a number 81 that I was kind of hoping.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's I think he may be the only basketball player ever to have worn 81, but you remember the point guard, Jose Calderon?
Of course, Toronto Raptor, of course.
Yeah, but so when he was a Toronto Raptor, I think he wore 8, because he used to wear 8 all the time. But at the end of his career, I think he was a Cav or maybe a Piston or something like that. And he wore 81.
Yeah, he was 81 for both of those teams. Yep.
Yeah. So Jose Calderon. Shout out Jose Calderon.
I couldn't dedicate it to one of my brothers, not the other. So, 81 had to be for the other one. And also, we'll also dedicate it to the newest addition to the Vreeland family that just happened. So, speaking of brothers, so there you go. Take that.
Shout out to the first Vreeland girl that's ever existed.
There you go. Other than wives, right?
Yes, other than wives, blood. They marry in. This is the first blood Vreeland lady in quite some time.
And she has no say in the matter. It's just the way it's going to be, kids. So, it's been an exciting time for Dan. Uncle again today. His beloved Atlanta Braves got the job done last night and are into the real playoffs now, because these wild cards don't count in my books, because when I was a boy, there was no wild cards. There was American East, American West. Those two teams played, and the National League East, National League West played, and that was it. That's the playoffs, not this wild card stuff. So Atlanta's actually in the playoffs now.
That's the way it worked on my MLB 93 game for Nintendo.
Yep. Yep, there you go. Exactly.
I remember being a kid in like 1997 being like, where's the NL Central? Where did it go?
Oh, wow. That's so strange. So strange to me now. But more importantly, last day was a good night for you, because you went 4-1 on your contender series picks, and you predicted the fight that you didn't. Yeah, I guess you predicted which one you were going to get wrong, but basically it was the fight that you were least confident on, and that was the main event, and that's one that you whiffed on. But the other ones went pretty much according to plan, didn't they?
Yeah, and I said I whiffed on this, to be completely honest. I said it was like a coin flip type fight. So if it's a coin flip type fight and one guy's betting off at +175, you bet him all day, right? Because you got a 50-50 chance. The payback's way better than that. It turned out not to be a coin flip fight. Man, Christian Rodriguez looked pretty darn good. Some of that might have been that he didn't really have to cut any weight, since he got to come in like 2 or 3 pounds heavy. But otherwise, he looked really good. Props to him for stuffing all of Junior Cortez's takedowns and being a touch faster than him on the feet. So props to him for that, although it looks like he's probably never going to get another shot with Dana having missed weight. Which is funny, because a different guy who missed weight has no problem getting a contract.
Yeah, well, Jake Hadley looked far more impressive than Christian Rodriguez last night. Would you not agree with that? And plus, he's, he's got the charisma, and he's just, a fun way of fighting also, which I'm sure melted the ice-cold heart of Dana White.
Yeah, well, I would say this, too. So a couple of things. You're right. First of all, better looking performance, because when he got taken down, he almost had an omoplata, and then he almost had a go-go plata. And then in the next round, he decided to be the one doing the taking down, look like an absolute beast. So, yes, fun to watch in the cage. Number two, beat a better opponent. Junior Cortez is not the same level of fighter as Mitch Raposo. Mitch Raposo, sorry to see him not get a contract here, but like, he is a guy who is super young, has fought really good competition, and we'll definitely be back on this show again in a year or two, or perhaps even get a short notice replacement fight at some point in time. So I'm not really worried about Mitch Raposo either, but a better opponent. And, you mentioned charisma, although I'm not sure you watched all of the interviews where they decided.
Yeah, I did.
He apparently pissed some people off.
Yeah. Well, you don't have any more info on that?
I don't. I guess a driver did not like having him in it. He claimed it was not understanding some British humor. That's the way Jake Hadley put it off. I don't understand British humor either. So I guess I can commiserate with that. But I actually think that probably played in his favor. I'm not going to lie, because not that, Dana hasn't punished somebody for like punching out the window of a limo before. Insert JT Money, Jesse Taylor.
Yeah. And then he got another shot and did awesome, and then got busted for drugs.
Tested positive for steroids. Man, that dude was a train wreck. But not that he hasn't punished those types of people before, but this seems like that like slightly edginess, almost like Patty Pimblett, where he's like a little edgy, a little showy. He's gonna probably flip somebody off, like Patty Pimblett and Nate Diaz had a love child. who's going to like flip you off, but also be somewhat controversial. He's going to bring ratings, in other words. I mean, the dude's nickname is White Kong, which is hell of a nickname for a dude who weighs 125 pounds or 127 pounds at this weigh-in. So, all things aside, the minute he won that fight, I knew he was getting a contract.
Yeah, has he had weight issues in the past that you know?
Never. In fact, he makes fun of people regularly for having weight issues.
Yeah.
Like, he has shit on a bunch of opponents before for doing that. So, yeah, incredible.
I take it he always uses his forearms to block. That's the thing that stood out the most with me, was his defensive style.
Yeah, and in – I'll be honest, I have seen him, you know, throw up defensive shells like that before, but I will say this, you don't typically see him having a need for defense. Like, even in cage warriors, a lot of the guys he fought, he just moved forward like a freaking, you know, a man on a mission and just beat the hell out of people. You know, took him down, choked him out, first round TKOs. I mean, even the guys who were taking him deeper into the fight, like back in EFC, fought Zulu, and like that fight went deeper. Even in that fight, he never looked like he had to play defense. So I think we might have saw a little bit of an issue there, but I mean, like ultimately, like that's something that gets ironed out by being tested.
Yeah, no, he definitely passed the test. So he was the one I was going to say he was the one I was most impressed with, but maybe not, because another one of your picks that came through, Slava Claus, was very impressive for the people call it a dad bod, which I think – I don't even know if you can call that a dad bod. His body type,
we'll
call it.
It's a weird physique. He looks –
weird physique. He kind of has
the same physique as Squidward from SpongeBob.
It's very true. Very true. So you get SpongeBob humor, but you don't get British humor. Is that over?
You know, I actually did not watch SpongeBob. I've never seen a full episode of SpongeBob in my whole life.
Because I was a little – it started in 99, I think. So,
so it started – did it start late, but also remember I didn't have Nickelodeon. So.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, of course.
And it wasn't on ABC.
so the British thing. No Monty Python for you?
No, I like, there are things from like old Monty Python movies that I get and I find funny.
Yeah.
But like I can't sit through a Monty Python movie and like think everything I saw was great.
How about Mr. Bean? You got to at least like Mr. Bean.
I don't really.
Oh, my God.
I get some of it, and I think it's, like, funny. But then there are other moments where I'm like, okay, are we just doing this again? It's not for me anymore. So maybe it's my short attention span as an American that we just need it to be changed up enough.
No, it's Canada's British colony thing that we had going on. We all have the same sense of humor, I guess. So we tend to get British things. So, anyway, this has nothing
British
to do
with colony too. We are British colony.
Yeah, forever. But this has nothing to do with Slava Claus, who sang Slava Claus is coming to town, which was great.
Now, real question here, and this is maybe the most important question of the entire contender series. Yeah. Better counter knockout or better dance?
The counter knockout, but yeah, the dance was pretty fine too. This we're gonna have to turn this into the Uriah Faber's contender series, I think, right? Because his men are coming through. Alpha Male's 2 weeks in a row they've made a splash on the show.
Yeah, one of them made me look really dumb. The other one made me look really smart. So
yes, this was plus money Dan got for Slava Borshev, and he did not look at all like he was the underdog in the cage there. He can look
and he also
fine.
Didn't look like an alpha male dude. Like that.
No,
that's
the wrestling wasn't really there.
No wrestling. No, like, you know, weird submissions. No, you know, like bull forward and throw like 30 punch hook combos like Chad Mendes used to. Like, nope. Yeah. Just like solid sniper striking from a distance. Almost like you thought Alpha Male was going to turn into when Martin Kampmann was their coach.
Right,
he looked more like Martin Kampmann than he did any of the guys there now.
It's true. We're jumping all over this card, though. But anyhow, the main event, Christopher Rodriguez beat Reyes Cortez, or Junior Cortez, Tracy Cortez's older brother. Three rounds to none. Didn't get himself a contract, though. And then co-main event, Mbube Lorenzo Hood via TKO knee. He got pieced up a few times, which kind of looked like Dan's pick may have been in doubt. But then it didn't even really look like he hit him that hard with the knee, but Hood had enough at that point. So
I think Hood was looking to quit. The knees to the knees, I think, had him wanting to quit. The ref almost called off that fight two or three times based on, like, groans that Hood let off after being kneed in, like, it was, like, not quite the thigh, but not quite the knee, but that, like, soft-ass spot right above your knee. He kept kneeing him right there. And, like, Hood wouldn't stand on it for a little while after being kneed. And he also, like, if he hit it the right way, he would, like, groan out. And, like, the ref almost stopped it there. So I think when he got kneed in the head, he was just like, screw this. This is over. I'm not hanging around any longer. Which is, you know, no offense to Lorenzo Hood, because he did step in here on short notice. But, like, that's kind of his MO, too. Like, he's got losses to dudes he shouldn't have lost to, which, you know, I mentioned, you know, before we were – when we were breaking it down. Like, Tyler King and Shelton Graves shouldn't be beating you if you're going to be on the Contender Series. And it's just, like, he's a big, muscly guy who's got a couple of punches in him, and that's pretty much it.
I agree with you. Like, yeah, like, I know either of those names you mentioned. Yeah, of course. No way you should lose to those guys.
Tyler King is a Northeast – I throw around the word legend. But, yeah, a Northeast legend. He fought a bunch in CES.
In Dan's mind, he's a legend, yes. So you got that one right. You got Jake Hadley right over Mitch Proposo. You got Slava Borshev over Chris Duncan. You got that right. And then you got the opener right, of course. Maria Silva over Catherine Poprocki. So everyone got contracts except Christian Rodriguez and Maria Silva. Do you agree with that?
No, I would have given one to Maria Silva too.
Yeah. She
looked great and she was violent.
Yeah. Pop Rocks was maybe too tough for her. That's what probably stopped her from getting a contract.
Yeah. But it also let her show off how good she was. Yeah. You know what I mean? And yeah, like Paparaki, as I said in the breakdown, definitely doesn't belong in there yet.
No.
She might someday.
She had four fights, right? Or five fights? That was her fifth fight.
That was her fifth fight, yeah. Yeah. So she certainly didn't deserve to be in there yet. She was a late replacement. But I think if you put Maria Silva in there against Silvana Juarez-Gomez, or Gomez-Juarez, Jesus, what a name. If you put her in there with her original opponent, I think she would have beat the shit out of her, too.
Yeah.
You know, you know, this is always kind of what bugs me is that, and maybe the UFC brass isn't actually, you know, they're just using this as like the lip service to the reason why people aren't getting contracts. But like, to say she went in there and beat somebody who's 3-1, and she was a -700 favorite and blah 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 blah, that's not an evaluation of talent.
No.
Right? Like we can evaluate her talent in a vacuum here. Without talking about the odds and without talking about how terrible her opponents are, she's got good, crisp striking. She showed she can actually wrestle. She showed she's got good transitions on the ground. She showed that she's, like, looking for the finish all the time. Like, that's the shit you want. And, it's a shame she didn't get one. But that being said, she is 7-0. She is only 25 years old. You know, put her in LFA for a fight or two or get her in one of those promotions and, like, you know, let her beat the hell out of some other strawweight. CFFC, she could win their title tomorrow if she wanted to. Put her in there and let's get her into the UFC at some point.
Yeah, it's not like they could use more women's strawweights. It's not like it's a jam-packed division like men's bantamweight or welterweight or any of those divisions. So kind of strange, but anyhow, fun night of fights again, especially fun because Dan went 4-1 again. So like, I lost track. What are you at now? It's an insane
20-5 in the last five weeks. Yeah, yeah. 20-5, which
crazy.
Is yeah, that is the kind of win percentage you all are looking for. So
exactly.
And let me tell you something too. Next week easy picks again.
Okay, well, this was something I mentioned on the Slack, which everyone should get in on SGPN Slack. It's lots of fun. Especially on the fight channel when fights are going on. You can count on superfan Zhang Li being there at the very least. usually there's a few other people there too. But I suggested that maybe we should get some quick picks from you on this podcast because it seems when we record Sunday, by the time the pod gets out, the odds are all over the place by the time people try to make picks. So I was thinking maybe not pick the whole card, but is there anyone that we're talking about week 8 contender series next Tuesday, is there anyone that people should jump on as soon as their whatever book they use, as soon as they have a number posted for a fight?
So it's tricky for me to say that because
so depends on the numbers, obviously, right?
It depends on the numbers because so I personally really like Solomon Renfro, who's going to be main eventing against Johnny Parsons. Yeah, I really like Solomon Renfro. I think he is again a top guy. The it's going to be interesting to see where his number comes out because here's the thing: he's coming off of a loss. Where he, who is actually, he's had 2 wins since then, but a lot of people remember his loss at the very end of 2020. He was a super hype prospect. They were like, this is going to be the big win that like puts him over the edge. And he fought this guy who was on a 3-year layoff. And the guy on a 3-year layoff popped him right in the face like a minute into the fight, instantly jumped on his back and choked him out cold. And that person wound up being Mike Mallett, the other Uriah Faber, yep, cast off, who just won himself, yep, a contract and was one of my one misses the other week. So it looked really bad at the time, and I don't know if people's mentality around Solomon Renfro has recovered from that, from how bad he looked in that fight. If he comes out on this fight and he in this line is even close, and I like Johnny Parsons. Actually, if you listen to the Top Turtle podcast, I actually interviewed Johnny Parsons this week. If this line comes out and it's close to even, jump on Renfro. But the only thing I will say is he was a hype prospect at some point, so you might see it open huge. So it's hard for me to tell you to jump on it until I really know what it is, right, and I can guess what the trend is going to be.
Okay, well, what's the highest that you would take him at, or the worst line you would take him at, opening line?
So if it opens in the ones or maybe even the very low twos, I would jump on it right away. Okay. I think he's probably also a decent bet in the high to mid twos, or if it cracks into the very low threes. But in those cases, I might even just wait and see if people get high on Johnny Parsons. And then if it blows up to -600, I just, you know, I throw in the towel and I say, well, I guess I missed out on betting Solomon Renfro at -300 because I'm not super excited about that number anyway. So, like, if I find him in the ones or early twos, I'm jumping on it. If I find him in the high twos or low threes, I might sit on it anyway. And any higher than that, I'm just probably being, you know, we talk about this all the time. Those numbers just don't excite us. So, unless you're, you know, a very high volume kind of guy who's going to throw, you know, you're the person who shows up in the DraftKings tweets that show up in the middle of a UFC broadcast where it says somebody just dropped $250,000 on Amanda Nunes to win $12. Like that's just not for me. So
yeah, that's strong.
Yeah,
that's strong lead for you.
go ahead and jump on Solomon Renfro. Exactly. That's you. But yeah, so I'm interested to see where that line comes out. I'm also interested in finding out more about Kai Bahio, who's coming into his second fight of the season already. He beat Aaron Jeffrey. He's got that very fun Muay Thai style. He's going to be fighting a wrestler, though. I still am not sold on what pick I'm going to do here yet because Jesse Murray is a guy who trains with Mo Miller and Stephen Miocic and all of those guys so at Strong Style. So he's one of those types of wrestlers. It almost feels kind of like a knockoff Ryan Bader versus knockoff Loyola Machida matchup, and we've seen those fights go one and one. So, not sold on either side of that yet, but that is an interesting one to keep an eye on as well.
That's as an American wrestling name as you're ever going to get, right? Jesse Murray, that's perfect.
Yeah, Jesse perfect. Murray kind of fits that too.
All right. So that's as I said in the Slack, that these are not Dan's official picks yet. I'm not going to hold him to these picks yet. He's allowed to flip-flop, especially once he sees the lines. You're allowed to flip-flop come up to our recording on Sunday night. But then we're locking you in on Sunday, and you're going to go 4-1 again next week. I thought you were going to go 5-0. Like, this is going to screw everything up if Dan goes perfect. But
I warned them on the Slack when I was 4-0. I was like, hey, and they were like, oh, we're betting the house on your fifth one. And I was like,
No.
Don't I always mess one up?
That's not the way it works. Come on, they aren't paying attention, obviously. So, all right, so another profitable and fun night of contender series. Sadly, there's only, what, three more? When are they going to run the next one is the question. We need this running. How often do they do it? A couple times a year, right? Is that it?
It needs to be more.
Yeah. I get rid of all the other nonsense they do, like Tough and – oh, never mind. You like Tough, but
– I love the Ultimate Fighter. It always comes back to that.
It does. All right. Enough time on that because we have an insanely good card coming up this Saturday, right, Dan? And you've already broken it down on a couple of your two other podcasts, Top Turtle MMA and Prelim Primer, so I'm sure you can't get enough of this card by now, right?
It's just fantastic. I will say. As I always do, will say.
Yes.
There are some very fun stylistic matches on here. There are also a couple of my personal favorites.
And a couple of not so, well, at least one not so favorite. So
there's one guy I fucking can't stand.
So this shall be fun. All right, before we do that, I haven't told you about any of our awesome sponsors yet. How about WynnBET? Ready to win money and boost your odds? WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. We're bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas to online sports betting and casino play. Exclusive rewards right at your fingertips. Get in all your favorite teams, players, and sports from NFL, NBA, MLB, NHL, golf, MMA, WNBA, college football, and more. For your promos, odds, and payouts are happening right now at WynnBET. From boosted parlays to live in-game odds in every major sport, we have what you need to win. Ready to play? Sign up today to receive a special offer, risk-free $1,000 sports bet. Download BetWynn. Download the WynnBET app now or visit WynnBET.com to start winning. And we're brought to you by PropSwap, America's marketplace to buy and sell sports bets. The MLB playoffs are in full swing, as we mentioned. Go Braves. And PropSwap is your home for the best World Series futures. All season long, PropSwappers have been finding the best odds in the country because you're buying directly from other bettors like yourself. Use the promo code SGP on your first deposit, and PropSwap will double it up to $500. Double the cash means double the odds. If you love sports betting, you need to be using PropSwap. Every ticket purchase on PropSwap can be resold at any time, so your bet doesn't need to win in order to make money. It just needs to improve. Thousands of bettors across the country are shopping for tickets on PropSwap every day. Get started today by going to PropSwap.com or download the PropSwap app. PropSwap is where America buys and sells sports bets. All right. Do you have a bunch of futures on the Braves winning the World Series, Dan?
No, I almost never bet on the Braves because it maybe I'm superstitious. It feels like bad juju. I did once bet the over on a season season for the Braves. The win total was 66.5. And this is kind of a fun story. It was 66.5, which is a pretty low win total. Yeah. They were pretty terrible that year. And they had four games left, and they needed to win two of them to hit the over. And I was pretty confident they were going to do that because one of them was against the Marlins. And then they had a series with the Tigers, who had already clinched, I think, a playoff spot, so they weren't really playing for anything. I was like, oh, yeah, they can win. They'll beat the Marlins, and then they just got to win one out of three with the Tigers. And then what's-his-face, the pitcher there for the Marlins died in that boating accident. Yeah. So they just canceled that game. Not to be made up, but then they won two out of three against the Tigers in, like – but, like, when they cancel the game, you, like, don't want to be pissed at, like, the bet. But at the same time, you're like, I've been waiting all season for this, and this guy dies on the bet. And, obviously, he died on more than the bet. That's a terrible way to look at it. But you know what I mean. So, yeah, I don't bet on the Braves. Anyway, long story.
There you go. No, plus because when Dan bets the Braves, people die is what we've learned. But speaking of that, isn't it amazing how the oddsmakers – like it always comes down to like one or two games. They seem to like more often than not, like somehow they get these numbers like
perfect. They're perfect.
Perfect. It's insane, right?
The NFL spreads are one of the most impressive things I've seen. And I know this is crazy off topic, but like anytime you look at an NFL spread and you're like, how do you come up with 4.5 on this one? And it's a 5-point game every single time. Wild. I'm like, I don't know how they're doing this, but it feels wrong. Yeah, they're good at what they do. That's why they have money.
And so are we, Dan. We're good at what we do. That's why we have winning picks. So We're going to give you your picks for UFC Fight Night Ladd versus Dumont. If you don't want to watch it, that's fine, but you can bet on it. $100 in every fight. We haven't drilled that home for the past little while, but $100 in every fight is what you're, by listening to this podcast, by hearing me talk this moment, you're contractually obligated to bet $100 on every fight. $100 American equivalent, wherever you live, because we have listeners all over the world. So yeah, you have to bet at least 100 American on every fight and you will enjoy it. So yes, this is going down in the Apex as per usual this Saturday, as per usual. 7 o'clock is the main card on ESPN Plus, 4 PM Eastern on the prelims on ESPN Plus. Also, I do, as I mentioned on my MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com, I do fight card rankings, and this one, the rankings are based on the rankings of the fighters on the card, so and given more credit to the main and co-main event, so better fighters there, they get more points, because that's what more people care about is the main and co-main. So anyhow, long story short, this fight card is one of the worst I have ranked since I started doing this years and years ago. So it's pretty at least on paper, it's not a star-studded fight card. But as we've said before, who cares who's fighting? Well, as a fan, we care who's fighting, but in betting terms, we don't care who's fighting. It can be robots fighting, and we will. It can be pretend horses racing, and people will bet on it. So we can still make money off of this, regardless of who's fighting. So we'll start with women's strawweight, Estela Nunez versus Ariane Carnelosi. Nunez has no nickname. Carnelosi's nickname is Soreso. Do you know what that means, Dan?
I have no idea. No.
Smile. So that's what it is. So there you go. Nunez, this will be her debut in the UFC. She is 6-1 with one no contest as a professional, 2 knockouts. Last 2 fights have gone win, loss, win. They were both in one FC, which is, as we all know, is the biggest and best MMA promotion ever in the world, correct?
7 billion people watch
yes,
it every
7
week.
7 billion. It's true. Not just on Earth either. That's the thing, that they've discovered other galaxies that watch this also. So she's fought. She actually fought for the belt too, the strawweight belt in ONE FC. So she has some top level experience. However, she has not fought since July of 2018. She's 2 inches taller than Carnelosi, 5 inches reach. She's at +130. Carnelosi's 13-2 with 9 knockouts, 1 submission. 1-1 in the UFC. She won the last fight via TKO after dropping her debut. She's at -165. Can you tell us first? Can you tell us anything about Nunes? Have you seen her fight? And what do you think about this matchup?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of her fights. ONE FC, you know, I don't watch it live ever because I'm not one of the 7 billion people who do. But they do make their fights pretty accessible if you want to go back and watch. So I watched a little bit of her fight with Angela Lee. She beat Mei Yamaguchi, who I say this time and time again, and I've said it, I think, now on all 3 podcasts, that Mei Yamaguchi is just like a name who is kind of underrated in the women's MMA world. She's kind of a pioneer and a legend in her own right. And Nunes has got a win over her. And stylistically, she's kind of a fun Muay Thai style striker. She likes to keep her distance, throws like knife kicks and teeps and all that kind of good stuff. So she should be fun to watch, regardless of whether or not you feel like she's going to be successful.
And I don't. I'm picking Carnelosi. Just based on resume, it's because I haven't seen her fight. So,
well, that's good because I'm gonna differ. On the very first fight of the night, I am actually gonna take Estela Nunez. Carnelosi's kind of reckless for me, and that worries me a little bit against somebody who is so tactically sound in Nunez, and who works well in a clinch, as Nunez does. She like I said, has like a Muay Thai style about her. She works well in a clinch. So Carnelosi just kind of like. I mean, you saw her in her previous fight. She kind of just come forward like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
And, like, I think she would have lost to Na Liang had Na Liang not gassed out worse than any fighter I've ever seen before in my whole life. Like, she literally just, like, laid down and quit at one point in time in that fight. So, yeah, like, I don't think that style works well against somebody who's a tactician. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Nunez, especially with dog money early on.
That's exactly what I would do in a UFC fight, though. I would lie down and quit right away. So
yeah, Nick Diaz only we don't get up.
Yes, exactly. All right. Yeah, so Dan's going for some plus money right out the gate. I was going to ask you before you started making picks, thoughts on handicapping this this fight card?
Miserable.
Miserable?
No, not fun. There's a lot of big-ass question marks that are – I mean, Estela Nunes hasn't fought in 3 years, and when she did, yeah. She fought in ONE FC against decent competition. So you have, like, that, like, high level of competition but a huge layoff and then coming to a new country to fight. I mean, there's just too many questions, but yeah. I do like her style. So we're going to go with that.
Yes, yeah, this seems to be quite chalky for me again, unless I may flip-flop when I get more intel on some fighters from Dan, so we'll see. Moving on, but hey, being chalky has paid off for, about almost a month straight now. I'm sure the other shoe is going to drop eventually, but because we're still right at two-thirds of the favorites come through. We're at 67% since I started tracking this at the starting of 2020, so we're almost 2 years in. And we're right at the two-thirds mark, but the past few, like I said, maybe going back a month, maybe? Does that sound about right? We've had, one or two, a couple underdogs come through in every card instead of four or five, so it's definitely, like I said, we're waiting for it to swing the other way. Hopefully not this week, though, because I think I'm going to go almost all chalk. All right, Bantamweights. I can't remember how you say his name, Dan. Dana Batgarel, is that right?
Yeah, and you can even say it in the other order, too, because he's Mongolian. So sometimes Batgarel denies the way I've seen it most. And I don't know which one's right. But, yeah, Batgarel denies.
I meant his opponent's name, though. How do you say that?
Brandon Davis.
Oh, weird. Okay, I guess. I guess it makes sense. All right, Batgarel, his nickname Storm. Davis is Killer Bee. I'll go with Storm as the better nickname of the two.
Yeah, I think Storm probably works better. Yeah, especially because Killer Bee already exists, right? That's Ben Saunders. Yeah,
exactly. Plus the tag team from the 1980s. Come on, the Killer Bees. That was probably before your time. Well, it definitely was before your time. It was the 80s.
Correct.
all right, Killer Bee, Brandon Davis, 14-8, four knockouts, four submissions. So very well rounded with the finishes. 2-5 in the UFC. This will mark his return to the UFC. How did he last for to go 2-5 is what I want to know, Dan, originally.
Have you seen the people he fought?
Yeah, I know. It's true.
Oh,
it's
my true. God. Like, that's how he lasted. Like, when you take short-notice fights against Zabit Magomedsharipov and Giga Chikadze, that's how you last.
Yes, it's true. Enrique Barzola.
And he choked out Randy Costa.
Yeah. Are you tipping your hand, Dan, before I'm even done here? Giga Chikadze. We'll see. All right. So, anyhow, he's back. When was his last UFC fight? It was against Giga Chikadze, as Giga was on the come up. That was 2 years ago, September 2019. So since then, he's fought in Gulf Coast MMA. Have you watched any Gulf Coast MMA, Dan?
I have, yeah. I've seen Brandon Davis on it because I enjoy watching him fight.
That's wild. So anyhow, he won four straight there and became their bantamweight champ. So that's what he was doing since he got cut. Now he is back in the UFC. With the four straight wins, like I said. He also was on the Contender Series before all of this, before his original foray in the UFC where he was 1-0. He used to fight at lightweight and featherweight. He's 3 inches taller, got 2 inches reach on Batgarel. Grappling stats in his favor, plus 150. Batgarel, 9-2 with 5 knockouts, 2 submissions, never been finished in a fight. He's 2-1 in the UFC. He lost his debut, but won his last two via knockout and technical knockout. He also used to be lightweight and featherweight, so they should be fairly similar sizes when we step in the cage. Striking and active striking stats in his favor, minus 190. Are you going dog two in a row, Dan?
I'm not. I'm going with Buckaroo.
No.
Nah.
Yeah, I am too. Too bad.
I think I do really like Brandon Davis. I just think this is a very unfortunate way to step back into the UFC. They're putting him against a guy who – I think likes to strike as much as he does and is a touch faster. And as we've seen in his last two fights, hits a lot harder than Brandon Davis. Dana Batgarel, the dude just slugs. I think there's probably some ways to mitigate what he does so well on the feet and by taking him down a little bit. I just don't think that's for Brandon Davis. Like, Brandon Davis is a guy who's going to overwhelm somebody like Randy Costa, who might get tired or might not have the wrestling defense he needs. Whereas Batgarel is like, he's got the wrestling defense he needs and he can punch your head off. So you either need to be a phenomenal wrestler or not willing to take a punch on the feet. And Brandon Davis is neither of those things.
Yes, an unfortunate matchup Ben Davis. You know what else is unfortunate, Dan? Losing your hair. That's what's unfortunate. Let me tell you, Dan. I don't think you've experienced this yet, have you? But at least
I have not. I got a little gray though.
Do you? All right, that's fine. I've got both though. Losing your hair is not fun, so that's why we are sponsored by Keeps. Because I'm sure there's other listeners out there with the same issues here. Keeps offers a simple, stress-free way to keep your hair. Convenient virtual doctor consultations and medications delivered straight to your door every 3 months. You don't have to leave your home. Low-cost treatments start at just $10 per month. And Keeps offers generic versions, discreet packaging, and proven results. Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors. Prevention is key. Treatments can take 4 to 6 months to see results. So act fast. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to Keeps, KEEPS.com/SGP to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/SGP to get your first month free. KEEPS.com/SGP. And if my kid keeps comparing me to balding, flabby, middle, I was going to say Middle Eastern, but I guess it's usually Eastern European fighters that he always likes to compare me to, then I should probably get Keeps also. Let's say about prediction strike two while we're at it. Do you wish you could have had stock in a guy like Patrick Mahomes or Christian McCaffrey? Well, now prediction strike makes that a real possibility. Prediction strike is the only performance-based sports stock market where you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. It's like Robinhood and DraftKings had a baby. Prediction Strike lets fans create portfolios of their favorite athletes so they can make money and get even closer to the game. So it's just better in your favorite players, start investing in them. So simply download Prediction Strike's new and easy-to-use app from the App Store or sign up at PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Use code SGPNMMA, then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players, just like you would real stocks. The value of players will change based upon game performances and supply and demand, and you can trade your shares of players at any time, as long as the player isn't currently in the game. So sign up with promo code SGPNMMA to receive a free athlete share with your first deposit of $20 or more. And if you want more info, find the article that Gumby wrote on sportsgamblingpodcast.com. He wrote basically an introduction on how you play prediction strikes. So get in there and make sure you use our code so they know you got this from your favorite podcast in the world. All right, let's move on. We move up a weight class to featherweights. Nate Landwehr versus Ludovic Klein. Do you spell Ludovic Klein's, when you write his name, do you spell it appropriately with the little ass apostrophe thing that he's got after the L, Dan?
I don't. Well, mostly just because I can't find it. I just can't find it on my keyboard.
Okay, yeah. That's fine, Dan. That's fine. You don't have an Eastern European keyboard, I guess. So he's what? Slovakian, right? He's the only Slovakian, I think, in the UFC. Or ever, isn't he?
Well, now one of two, right?
Right, who do they have now?
Martin Boudet. Wasn't Martin Boudet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. He just became the second.
There you go. All right, so Nate the Train Landwehr versus Ludovic Mr. Highlight Klein. I'll go with Mr. Highlight. That's a better nickname for sure.
Yeah.
The Train's been on the Top Turtle MMA podcast, right?
He has. He's quite the character.
Yes, he is. And I think, is Brandon Davis been on it?
He was a really long time ago, yeah. But no, I think right. So far we're just on the Train.
Okay. The Train is 14-4 with 8 knockouts. He's 1-2 in the UFC. He's gone loss, win, loss. Last fight being a knockout loss. Before this, he was the champ in M1, the big promotion mostly in Russia. He's 2 inches taller. He's twice more active striker than Klein, but Klein's, well, yeah, they both have only fought 2 or 3 times in the UFC. He's at plus 260. Mr. Highlight is 17-3, 8 knockouts, 8 submissions. So everything is a finish except one fight that he won. 1-1 in the UFC, he lost his last fight. 7 years younger, grappling stats in the favor, minus 350. I'll take the big chalky, Mr. Highlight, in this one, please.
Yeah, I'm going to take the chalk here, too. The difference maker for me is just we've got Nate Landwehr coming in having been knocked out 2 of his last 3 fights.
Yep.
Only Darren Elkins, who's not really a knockout artist, got him. Wasn't able to get him. And then he's super reckless on his feet, too. That's the other thing. That's kind of why Herbert Burns knocked him out. And he's fighting in a phenomenal counter striker. I mean, what more recipe for disaster could you get than a counter striker with big power about to fight a guy who's been knocked out a couple of times and gets reckless and isn't afraid to eat a punch? He's going to eat a punch. And that's pretty much all there is.
Are we going to have a highlight for Mr. Highlight?
I think so, yeah. I think this is a highlight ender for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Landwehr is not really – he came in kind of hyped up, right? Or you were kind of big on him. He hasn't really looked that great.
I actually thought he was going to wrestle more than he does.
In
offensively and defensively, because he came from M1 Global, right, where he had to fight like a lot of Dagestani guys or a lot of guys from Kyrgyzstan or like stuff like that. And he did pretty well wrestling-wise, and now he showed up here, hasn't really had to wrestle offensively or defensively, but also has chosen not to wrestle offensively, and instead gotten popped by guys who are largely grapplers, or, you know, like, I guess Julian Arosa isn't a grappler, but, like, also is not, like, the craziest power striker of all time.
No, and he's got a horrible nickname that he stole from me, right?
So. Juicy J.
I am Juicy J. Shock juice. All right, moving on. This fight just happened. It's pretty crazy. Lupi Godinez, you're probably thinking, hey, didn't you just talk about her? Yes, we just talked about her last fight card. She is stepping in on short notice, up a weight class from her strawweight, women's flyweight fight. She's stepping in to fight Luana Carolina because first of all, Marina Moroz was supposed to fight. She backed out. Sajera Eubanks was going to fight Carolina. Oh, Carolina, and she backed out. So everyone's obviously scared of her, but not Lupi. Lupi Godinez is stepping in here. So Lupi's nickname's Lupi, short for Lupita, and Carolina's nickname's Dread, which is a pretty good nickname also. Let's tell you about Dread. Just found a number for this fight. Just came up on the board. Dread is 7-2, two knockouts, one submission. 2-1 the UFC. She's gone win-loss, win. So she's bound to lose, I guess, right? 1-0 in the Contender Series. Used to fight at bantamweight. She's had trouble missing weight for flyweight. So this will probably be, she'll probably be the much larger fighter here, weight-wise, since she's used to fight at bantamweight, and she's fighting someone who usually fights at strawweight. Also, she's 4 inches taller, 8 inches of reach, which is pretty huge. She's 1.5 times more active striker, plus 225 for her. Lupi, 6-1 with one knockout, one submission. Never been finished in a fight. 1-1 in the UFC. She just won via submission on October the 9th. She's taking the short notice, obviously, like I said, and she usually fights a strawweight, which she moved up here. Before all this, she was the LFA champ. Striking stats are in her favor, minus 265. Why shouldn't I take the bigger, stronger, more experienced fighter for plus 225, Dan?
Not stronger, A. So that's the first part. Yep. Maybe bigger, but not stronger. And also, no offense to Luana Carolina, because I was high on her when she got to the UFC too. A bad grappler. Objectively bad grappler. Like, I mean, go back to her loss to Ariane Lipsky. She lost to Ariane Lipsky, who is, again, mostly just a kickboxer, right? Like, they call her the Queen of Violence. She likes elbows in the clinch and all that kind of stuff. And Lipsky knee-barred her with one of the most brutal knee-bars ever, and it was just basically because she didn't understand that her legs shouldn't be there, which is like a fundamental tenet of jiu-jitsu in that position, like, hey, your leg's in danger, and she just let it dangle there. So Lupita Godinez came out in that last fight, too. I would tell you, if you gave me this fight before this past weekend, I'd debate it longer, but with Lupita Godinez going in there, picking up 4 takedowns really fast on Juarez, and then showing she's just got slick jiu-jitsu that we had just not seen before, I like her again here. And you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb, and this is a prop early. I'm going to say she gets back-to-back subs.
That would be crazy. 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, if you're a bad grappler going up against her, it's definitely not worth the risk taking plus 225. So Godinez is the pick, despite the size differential and the quick turnaround. All right, we're moving on. Welterweights, Danny Roberts versus Ramazan Emiev. Emiev is Goretz. Do you know what Goretz means?
I do not. No.
Little pig is what I Googled it.
Little pig.
Yes, apparently. He's a little pig, Dan. He's fighting against Hot Chocolate, Danny Roberts, who Jong wants me to call something else. So I'm going to call him Cold Bosco instead of Hot Chocolate.
Why does he not want Hot Chocolate?
I don't know. He
that's
wants
a great big name.
He wants to become Lukewarm Tea. I think he's fading here. Actually, that's Jong sent me a whole bunch of his thoughts on this fight, so I may as well read that to us before I break it down. All right. He wants me to mention this on the pod via our Slack. In his 9 UFC fights, not including the Ultimate Fighter fights, Andrew Sanchez – wait a minute. This is a fight I'm looking at. That's right.
You're looking at the wrong –
yeah, nope, sorry. That's coming up. That's a tease, everyone. Yeah, Danny Roberts, he just mentioned the nickname. So, all right, let's break her down. Little Pig's a much better nickname, though, because it's ridiculous. Robert, 17-5, 8 knockouts, 5 submissions. All of his losses have come via finish. He's been knocked out 3 times. He's been subbed 2 times. 6-4 in the UFC, 1-2 over his last 3. He won his last fight via knockout. That was way back in November 2019, though. He's 3 inches taller than Emiev. He's more active striker. He also was a pro boxer, or maybe he still is, in the if he gets released. He's 3-1 as a pro boxer, plus 230. And the little pig, Emiev, is 20-4 with 3 knockouts, 7 submissions, 5-1 in the UFC, two straight wins. He was the M1 champion over in Europe before this, when he was a middleweight. This is at welterweight now. He's 2 inches reach. Striking stats in his favor, grappling stats in his favor, minus 300. Pretty easy pick for me. Emiev is the pick.
Yeah, and I will say this. Emiev is sometimes overrated as a grappler, as somebody who can take people down, because his takedown rate is really low for a guy who comes from that part of the world. I think he was only 4 of 12 last fight and 4 of 9 the fight before, if I was remembering those stats correctly. So, like, I think sometimes we need to push the break a little bit here on Emiev as a real prospect. But, you know, he had trouble taking Anthony Rocco Martin down. But Danny Roberts is just, again, a guy who does not defend takedowns well. So this is, you know, I talked before about there being some weird style clashes and some weird things that we need to worry about here. This ain't one of them. Nope. Just take the guy who's going to wrestle the hell out of the other guy and win probably a really freaking boring decision.
Yeah, but hey, you have to bet $100, so you're going to bet it and make, what, $33. So there you go. All right, and our main event of the prelims is Andrew Sanchez versus Bruno Silva. Sanchez is El Derte, and Silva's Blindado. Do you know what Blindado is? I think we've been through this before.
Blindado. Armored, right?
Yes, armored. Correct.
Yes.
All right, I'll give you a breakdown, and then I'll read you Superfan Jong's breakdown of the fights before we make our picks. All right, El Derte, Sanchez, 12-6, 6 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times himself, so 4 of his 6 losses have come via knockout. He's 5-4 in the UFC. He's gone loss, win, loss over his last 3 fights. His last fight was a TKO loss. He was 3-0 in the Ultimate Fighter House and was the champion. That was at light heavyweight. This is down at middleweight. He's an inch taller than Silva, more active striker, grappling stats in his favor, plus 125. For Blindado Silva, 20-6, 17 knockouts. He's been subbed 5 times in his career. Shouldn't be too much of a concern here since Sanchez is not much of a submission guy. He's 1-0 in the UFC, 1 via knockout. He's won 5 straight fights. He also was an M1 champ. This is the M1 card. We got 3 former M1 champs so far already. Year younger than Sanchez, minus 176 is where it was when I did this breakdown earlier today. That number has gone up. I think Jong is big on Silva. I think he got him at minus 130, and then he went up to minus 150 earlier today. Now he's at minus 176. So people are listening to Jong. All right, here's his scouting for this fight. It is 9 UFC fights, not including Ultimate Fighter fights. Andrew Sanchez started out his first 5 fights with a 13-29 takedown success rate, I guess he means. But in his last 4 fights, he's only been successful on 2 of 19 takedown attempts. Terrible. I can't back this guy, is what he says. Conversely, Bruno Silva is supposed to be a black belt in BJJ, but where are his submissions? He fights like he's double parked. He doesn't get paid by the hour. So he says Bruno Silva's the pick. Do you agree with Bruno Silva, or do you have any other things you'd like to add on top of that?
I do, but I'll say I am picking him for a slightly different reason. I do agree that Silva fights like he's trying to get somebody out of there and hits really hard. My worry here about Sanchez is not necessarily that the recent amount of submissions or takedowns he's gotten are not good, but it's that because he knocked out Wellington Turman, he's kind of got that problem that some grapplers get, that when they knock somebody out, they think they're like, they can strike. Remember Gabriel Gonzaga knocked out Mirko Krokop and thought he was a kickboxer for the next 5 years of his life. Despite the fact that he was like beating people with jiu-jitsu before that. Like this is one of those cases where Sanchez in his last fight looked like he wanted to, and don't get me wrong, he shot a couple of takedowns, but he looked like he wanted to box Mahmoud Muradov, which, unless your name's Gerald Meerschaert, is just not going to go well for you. So Andrew Sanchez, I think the problem is he's going to go in here and strike too long. I think if he went right to the wrestling quickly, I think that negative 130 number makes a lot more sense, but I think from a fight IQ standpoint, that negative 175, which, by the way, if it's still there, grab it now. is a good pick for Bruno Silva.
Yeah, it seems to be, like I said, I mapped out where it's headed. It's headed in the wrong direction if you want to get on Silva. So if the lucky people, the smart people, actually, and they're not lucky, smart people who heeded my advice and have subscribed to our direct feed, MMA Gambling Podcast, will, second they get these words in their ears, they can put all their money, all their life savings and their children's college funds on Blindado Silva. Everyone listening on the SGPN feed won't get this advice till like Friday morning, I think. So by then, it'll be what, minus 500, right?
I don't think he'll do that. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it to negative 250 by fight time, though.
Hey, we got some high rollers in our audience, surely, Dan, so that they can drive that number up there. You never know. So that's the prelims. Let's let you know about our last couple of sponsors, and we will go ad-free main card. Odds Crowd, are you the best NBA bettor in the U.S.? You said you weren't the best NFL one. Are you the best NBA one maybe, Dan?
Maybe not in the U.S.
No, okay. In your little neck of the woods, possibly.
Sure.
You can prove it on Odds Crowd in their free-to-join-and-play fantasy betting contest. There's a season-long NBA contest with $3,000 in cash up for grabs, as well as weekly $200 contests as well. Here's how it works. Once you enter a contest, you track your bets against real odds and lines, much like you would with any pick tracking app. The most profitable players rise up the leaderboard. If you have the highest profit at the end of the contest, you win. And Odds Crowd isn't just a fantasy betting contest. It's a social app for sports bettors. Free to download. You can live group chat with other bettors, track your bets, set up private contests with your buddies, and much more. So download the app for free or go to oddscrowd.com today. And if you're going to download apps and you haven't already, make sure you download the SGPN app. Pretty please. We are now live in the App Store and Google Play Store. We give you easy access to all our picks and podcasts and everything else. We have all the promos. We're always giving things away. And after you download it, give us a favorable app review, why don't you? All right. Let's do main card time. Middleweights. Julian Marquez versus Dan Gumby favorite Jordan Wright. Backed by Gumby. Jordan Wright is the Beverly Hills Ninja, and Marquez is the Cuban Missile Crisis. Obviously, we can't back Beverly Hills Ninja nickname or him in the fights. You hate him, Dan. There's no real reason why you hate him.
I would say this. I've come around to him a little bit more than I had before because, let's face it, like, so he is a guy who I thought was crushing cans on the regional circuit. Right. His first win in the UFC was a giant fluke. His first loss in the UFC wasn't a giant fluke. You know, like, he won by cut in the first fight pretty quickly. And like that fight was far from being over. You know, I think it was only a minute in or something like that. And then he got beat up pretty good. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's what he actually is. He looked better last time out against Jamie Pickett. But again, Jamie Pickett, not really a high level opponent.
No, let's tell you about Mr. Wright's, resume here. He's 12-1 with one no contest, 7 knockouts, 5 submissions. So everything's a finish for him. 2-1 in the UFC, win-loss-win is what he has gone. He won via TKO his last fight. He got a no contest on the Contender Series, which originally was a loss. He used to fight at light heavyweight. This is down at middleweight. He's got 5 inches reach over Marquez. He's a year younger. He lands about one and a half times more strikes than Marquez. He's at plus 195. The Cuban Missile Crisis is 9-2 with 6 knockouts, 3 submissions, so everything finished for him. Do you think this one's going to be a finish too, Dan?
I do, yes.
Marquez has never been finished in a fight, so maybe Dan is tipping his hand there too. He's 3-1 in the UFC. He's won 2 straight fights, both via finish. Not a surprise since everything's a finish for him. 1-0 in the Contender Series. He also used to fight at light heavyweight. He's had issues missing weight at middleweight. He's at minus 250. We're both going to back the Cuban Missile Crisis, correct?
Yeah, and I don't think this is a hard one to pick. You know, like the best person Jordan Wright has ever beat is probably Jamie Pickett, unless you count, like I said, that weird cut stoppage victory over Ike Villanueva. And even then, like, Ike Villanueva is, what is he, 1-3 in the UFC with only a win over.
He got released, didn't he?
No, he's actually fighting next week?
Okay.
Next week, yeah, he's fighting Nick Negromanu. He's getting another shot. But yeah, like that's probably the best guy he beat, and that was by weird cut stoppage. And Jamie Pickett had to fight on the Contender Series 3 times because he lost the first two. still, Jordan Wright's wins are not impressive. Julian Marquez is out there adding a submission game. You know, like clearly the work he's doing now that he's working with James Krause is paying off. The guy looks great out there. I expect him to both mix in his wrestling and crack Jordan Wright on the feet. I got him by finish here.
And, yeah, it's hard to go against the Glory MMA James Krause backed fighter. So, so we go from one of his least favorable fighters to one of his favorites. Menon Fiorot is fighting Moira Bueno Silva. They were supposed to fight at UFC 266. We broke this one down too, didn't we?
I believe so, but I can't remember. No, it might have gotten canceled right before we went to air.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right. So, anyhow, it got the COVID treatment and got pushed ahead to this fight card. So Fiero is the beast, very true. Silva is Shitara, which I don't know what that is, so I can't say very true. The beast, obviously, because that's what Fiero is the beast, so I agree with that. So let's talk about Silva first. 7-1-1, one knockout, five submissions, never been finished in a fight. 2-1-1 in the UFC. Her last fight was a draw. 1-0 in the Contender Series. She used to fight at bantamweight. She's got an inch of reach, 1 year younger than Fiero, plus 185. The Beast, 7-1, six knockouts, never been finished in a fight. 2-0 in the UFC, both via TKOs. She won seven straight fights, inch of height over Silva. Striking stats in her favor, plus she's twice more active striking than Silva. Grappling stats in her favor, minus 240. Obviously, we are going with the Beast here. Another easy pick.
Yeah, this is, we said there's some tough ones in there. This seems like an easy one. She's going to charge forward. She's going to pick Silva apart. Silva might shoot some takedowns and try to get this to the mat, but I also think people underestimate how good Fiero is in stuffing takedowns, and actually her wrestling offensively is pretty good in its own right. Yeah, I think she picks her apart here pretty easily. Fiero is a easy and obvious pick for me.
There you go. Now we move on to one of my favorites, Jim Miller. Lightweight fight. Jim Miller, the epitome of a grizzled veteran, even looks like a grizzled veteran. He's going up against a newbie, Eric Gonzalez. Do you know that Miller's nickname's A-10?
I've seen that before. I don't know what the hell that is. I don't.
Is that some kind of gun you Americans use or something?
I might be the only thing I've ever heard him actually called. Like A-10, I think, has squeezed its way into a couple of broadcasts. But the only real nickname is it's Jim fucking Miller, right? Like, isn't that the one? Like, it's just supposed to be. You can't say that on a broadcast, but his name is Jim fucking Miller.
I forgot all about that. Yes. And Gonzalez is the Ghost Pepper, which is a good nickname, but obviously Jim Miller's unofficial nickname is better. Let's tell you about the Ghost Pepper. 14-5, eight knockouts, one submission. He's been subbed twice himself. It's something to keep a note of since he's fighting Jim Miller. This will be his UFC debut. He's won four of his last five and two straight. 3 inches taller, 3 inches of reach, 9 years younger, plus 175. Miller, 32-16 with one no contest. So this is fight 50 for him. Four knockouts, 18 submissions. He's 21-15 in the UFC with one no contest. He owns or shares multiple UFC longevity records. He debuted as a pro 2005, debuted in the UFC 2008. He's only won one of his last four fights. He's lost two straight, minus 225, so a big number for him. What can you tell me about Gonzalez before I make an official pick?
He kind of wing shots all the time, and when he fought Rafa Garcia got in on his legs ridiculously easy, picked him up, carried him across the cage, and slammed him in the middle of it.
Okay.
That
makes my pick easy then.
And that's Rafa Garcia, who I mostly think of as a boxer.
Yeah, okay. So I noticed every name, recognizable name on his resume is got an L beside it. He's got quite an extensive resume, but a lot of it in Combate, was it not, I think?
Yeah, he fought mostly in Combate. Yeah.
Any name of a guy who ended up in the UFC, it seems like he lost to it. So, yeah, Jim Miller is my pick. He was my pick until I heard more about Gonzalez, but he's definitely my pick now. I guess, do you have any other breakdown to make for this one, or is simply
not really. I think if Eric Gonzalez has, like, worked on his takedown defense and can stuff Jim Miller a couple of times, like, I think he's got some promise there, but ultimately – like, I don't think he's even that much better of a striker than Jim Miller if this was not to go to the ground. And then there's all of that facet of, like, if it does go to the ground.
Yes, exactly. And I saw a headline, Jim Miller is not retiring. So
Ever, yes.
He fought at UFC 100. He fought in UFC 200. And he said he wants to fight in UFC 300 also, which will be, what, almost 3 years from now because we're at 267 coming up. So, yeah, hopefully that happens. That would be pretty cool. All right. Co-main event. Oh, another one of Dan's favorites. This card is all like favorites or people that you really don't like. We got Andre Arlovski, Dan's boyhood crush, versus Carlos Felipe in a heavyweight fight. Andre the Pitbull Arlovski versus Carlos Boy, B-O-I, Felipe. So Boy is funny, but you got to go with the Pitbull.
Except well, do you know Boy is not translated to small child. It's translated to bull in Portuguese.
Right, yeah. Yes, I remember this. Yes, Dan taught me that, and it was out of my brain already. So, right, so this is another Grizzle veteran versus kind of an up-and-comer, I guess. He's had 12 fights on his resume. All right, let's go with the Pitbull first. His resume is extensive. It's going to take me a while. 31-20 with 2 no contests. So this is one of the rare fight cards where Jim Miller is not the most experienced fighter on it. This is fight 54. MMA fight number 54 for Andre Arlovski. 17 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's been knocked out himself 11 times, which is you would think would be a frightening thing, but it's not really, because his last time he got knocked out was 2019, so he's not getting knocked out as often as he was. He's in the UFC. He is 20-14 with 1 no contest over 2 stints in the UFC. He was former UFC heavyweight champion and interim heavyweight champion back in the dark ages of the UFC. He's won 3 of his last 4, including his last fight. However, he has not finished an opponent since 2015. So if you're going with Andre Arlovski, you're probably going to want to take him via decision here. Outside of the UFC, 2-1 in World Series of Fighting. He got a no contest in 1, the biggest promotion in the world that we told you about. He was 0-3 in Strikeforce, including an amazing knockout at the hands of Fedor Emelianenko, which he basically jumped into and got knocked out. He's a Sambo champion. He made his pro debut in 1999. See, I told you Jim Miller is not the most grizzled person here. So 1999 was his debut, UFC debut in 2000. He's 3 inches taller. Felipe got 2 inches of reach, grappling sets in his favor, -104. Why are we both going with Andre Arlovski?
That's a great question. -104, by the way, that number's gone. It seems to be swinging heavily in Carlos Felipe's favor.
Yeah.
Because I think when I saw it posted originally, -135 for Arlovski is like a large favorite. He's like a slight underdog now. Yeah.
I didn't break down Felipe, did I? I forgot to break down Felipe. Sorry, hold that thought. Let's break down Felipe first, and then we'll tell you why we're picking Arlovski, not just because Dan loves him. Felipe is 11-1, 6 knockouts, never been finished in a fight. 3-1 in the UFC. He's won his last 3 fights. He's 12 pounds heavier than Arlovski, 16 years younger, more active striker, -125. Now tell me I'm crazy for taking Arlovski here. Go ahead.
I don't think you are, because here's the thing about Carlos Felipe, and you'll notice this about pretty much all of his fights. He just becomes accustomed to this fight style that his opponent wants to fight. If you go back and look at his win over Jorgen De Castro and Justin Taffa, those guys are kind of like sit and wait in big counter guys. So he just also sat and wait. And he popped out a jab out there and just stayed away from the counter and won a fight that way. I mean, there's a reason he has a split decision win over Justin Taffa and a split over Jake Collier, a couple of guys who I'm not particularly high on. Again, they're guys who load up big on punches, and he just kind of stayed away from that. He will fight the fight that you want him to fight. Same with the fight with Sergei Spivak that he lost. He was willing to engage in the clinch against Sergei Spivak, which is stupid. So if that's true of all of his fights, I expect him to engage in the same kind of fight that Andre Arlovski wants, which is a smart point fight type fight. And I just think Arlovski's better at that than Carlos Felipe is. I think he's quicker still. I think he's better technically. And so, yeah, I'm going to back Arlovski here.
He's the only underdog I've taken up to this point. So it's going to be a boring fight also, if that's the way it goes down, right?
It is actually like, you know, I love Andre Arlovski, but like this probably is not going to be fun to watch.
No. When's the last time he's really had a fun fight though? Really? It's been a long time, but keeps on winning, keeps on cashing paychecks. So, all right. Main event, hastily arranged main event. All right. So the original main event, Ketlin Vieira versus Misha Tate. Misha Tate got COVID. So that got bumped. So Holly Holm, Norma Dumont got pushed up to the main event. Then Holly Holm pulled out. So now we've got Aspen Ladd, who almost died way in a few weeks ago. She's moving up weight class to featherweight to take on Norma Dumont. Norma Dumont is the immortal. Aspen Ladd has no nickname. Dumont, let's tell you about her first. She's 6-1 with 2 submissions. 2-1 in the UFC. She's won 2 straight fights after dropping her debut. She used to fight at bantamweight. This is at featherweight. She's has trouble making weight at bantamweight, so good for that. This is featherweight. She is a Sanda champ. Do you know what Sanda is, Dan?
Yeah, it's a Chinese kickboxing art, if I'm not
there
mistaken.
You go. Exactly. She's got 1 inch of height, 1 inch of reach on Ladd, plus 125. Aspen Ladd, 9-1, 6 knockouts, 1 submission, 4-1 in the UFC. She won her last fight via TKO. She was 5-0 in Invicta. It feels like I just read all this stuff, right? used to fight at flyweight, used to fight at bantamweight. She's had a lot of trouble missing weight, if you haven't heard the news. She used to be a professional kickboxer also. She's taken this on very short notice. 5 years younger, more active striker, grappling stats in her favor, minus 154. It feels wrong to back Ladd, but I think I am. It's kind of based on the health issues and all this stuff and going up weight class, but I think she's better than Norma Dumont.
Yeah, and I will also say this, like, you're right, health issues, right? But I don't know how long, maybe this is wrong for me to speculate, because I haven't ever done a very severe weight cut. I've like cut a few LBs for a jiu-jitsu tournament before, but I've never done like a big ass weight cut, which is clearly what Aspen Ladd was doing. I don't know that it takes longer than 2 weeks for her to recover from that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Do you expect that, like, 2 weeks later she's still feeling lethargic? Do you expect 2 weeks later that she's not herself? Like, I don't, right? Like, I kind of think, you know, probably give her a weekend and a couple of normal meals and some hydration, and she probably feels better by Tuesday, you know? And for me, that's kind of enough for me to kind of throw that out the window. And now she's doing a lesser weight cut, so I can expect her to have better energy in there, which bodes well for a 5-round fight. And in addition to that, like, if you go back and watch Norma Dumont beat Felicia Spencer, which I think is the only reason why these numbers are so close, is that, yeah, she has that win over Felicia Spencer, and Spencer was hyped for a while. I think Spencer was tagging her a little bit on the feet, and I don't mean significantly. I don't mean she was woozy, but, like, she hit her when she wanted to and got engaged in there, and sure wasn't a better striker than Norma Dumont, but Dumont was taking punches from somebody who is largely seen as a jiu-jitsu specialist. Aspen Ladd has that jiu-jitsu ability too and is going to be way better on the feet. I actually think she probably lands so many punches that Norma Dumont doesn't know what to do with herself, and I think she's got the wrestling and grappling advantage too. Also, remember, I feel like not enough people are remembering that Norma Dumont was once knocked out by Megan Anderson, who doesn't have a ton of knockouts on her record, like pure right. knockouts, right? Like, she stopped Peggy Morgan, but mostly because she made Peggy Morgan look like a cartoon version of the Grinch by punching her in the face so many times. But, like, she's not the type of person who, like, finishes somebody one touch, and that's what she did to Norma Dumont. So, you know, I'm not saying her chin is shot, but I'm saying she takes shots. And Aspen Ladd can slug a little bit. So, yeah, I like Aspen Ladd a lot in this fight.
And then after she wins this, she'll be the number one contender in featherweight, right?
I think she's probably got to be, right?
Since there's no one in featherweight, yes. She'll definitely look out. Amanda Nunes, Aspen Ladd is coming after your featherweight belt. All right, so that breaks down this amazing card. We differed on, what, one fight? Just the first one? Oh, my gosh. Is that it for real? Oh, well, I'll get that one right, and then I can relax the rest of the night, and I'll have you beat. So that's good. All right, degenerates are going to want props and parlays. You've given some out already, so what else do you have for them?
So I'm going to say my big two props here. We'll go Andre Arlovsky by decision, plus 200. Seems like a steal. If you're going to pick him to win, you know, a negative, I think you quoted me negative 104, you might as well get him plus 200, because he ain't finishing anybody with his current style. And that's crazy. I have no idea why that would come in at that number. And if your boogie is still offering that, get them on record saying that too. I'm also going to take Manon Fiorot by knockout. She's been off at plus 185 to knock her out, which seems also, really? That seems wrong, right? Like, it seems like she shouldn't be that high. seeing as she's finished both of her opponents and seemingly is going to do so here. So I like that as well. I'll take Bruno Silva by first round finish sometime in the first round. He could get a submission or a TKO. You can get that at plus 275. I think he just gets Sanchez out there early. So I like that one too. And I don't see a line on it yet, but I did mention I like Lupita Godinez by submission. I think because the odds are so new in this one, you're not going to see it. But like, if that pops up, I wouldn't be surprised to see it, you know, around plus 300 or plus 400. I might dabble there too.
Wow, you found some gems in there for us. That's amazing. Any parlays or is that enough for the people you think?
Sure. They're always going to want like a mega parlay. I usually try to get you in right around 10 to 1, right? That's my
go-to. It's usually where it ends up, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm gonna take Aspen Ladd. I think she's a good piece to have in this one. I'm also going to take Jim Miller. I think he's a good piece to have in any of them, especially betting off where he's at. I still think Manon-Viro's line is a little bit too low, so we'll throw her in there as well. And then, like, again, Bruno Silva, man, if you can get it early enough, he's like a really great piece for it. And then usually we need a fifth one. So who are we going to throw fifth? Who am I the most confident in? Want it to be a good line too. How about Arlovski? Screw it, we'll throw Arlovski in there.
Right?
That gives you 11 to 1. You get Jim Miller and Andre Arlovski in the same parlay in 2021, and you're gonna get them 11 to 1. So that's Ladd, Miller, Thiro, Silva, and Arlovski.
Amazing. All right, you want to – I believe you're first up for our locks of the week. Who would you like to make your lock pick this week?
I feel like it would be criminal if I didn't take Manon Fiorot.
Yeah, I feel like it would.
Yeah, take her. That's my girl right there, Manon Fiorot. Yeah.
I wanted to take her, but you got it. All right, let me see. Who am I most – I kind of want a decent line, but do I go all out and take Arlovski, Dan? No, let's take Silva. Everyone's so in love with Silva. I'm going to lock Silva in at -176 is when I got it.
You got to ride with our boy Lee.
Exactly. There you go. So there's the locks. Anything else we need to tell him, Dan? Or is it late enough now?
You captured it all.
We captured it all. All right. Who's that? We'll be back on what? Sunday? Yeah. Oh, I remember. It's my turn to say bye because you screwed up the year to bye again, which is why I like to make you do it. So we'll be back on Sunday. We will break down. Dan will give you all his picks for next week's Contender Series, which is where the money's made, and we'll tell you how we did with our picks for this very exciting Ladd versus DeMont fight card. In the meantime, read all our stuff, sportsgamblingpodcast.com and MMA-manifesto.com. Listen to Dan's Top Trade on MMA podcast with who's on it this week.
I'm talking with a couple of guys who are going to be on the Contender Series rather than on this not-so-great card. I talked to Johnny Parsons, who is fighting in the main event against the aforementioned Solomon Renfro, and I also talked to Jesse Murray, who is fighting Kai Bohio in his second fight, and he is a Stipe Miocic teammate, and he talks about training with Stipe. So a couple of good interviews for you there.
There you go. And you can listen to his prelim primer podcast, and he'll give you all the picks that he just gave you for his prelims, but also with a smart co-host. It wasn't me, so maybe it isn't a smart co-host, but hopefully he has a smart co-host on there giving picks out also. And I guess that's all I really have to tell you. Twitter. You want to hit us up on Twitter? Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Fox Writer, WRITER, and he's Gumby Vreeland. And that's all I have to tell you. I am and forever will be Shock Juice, a.k.a. Juicy Jeff, a.k.a. Juicy J. And what nickname should I use for you? Do you care?
No, surprise me.
Oh, I one of them I haven't used yet. He is the son of Ichabod, the Bear Whisperer, Daniel Vreeland. And we will talk to you on Sunday. Bye-bye.